Professor Clayton, I have a wager on these questions, so.
Do we put our name on it?
Don't let me down.
Pardon me?
Yeah, put your name on it.
Put your name on it. What you really ought to do is, in the future, is let's have people put their name on the back side of the card. Because that way, when these actually turn into quizzes that count, we can grade them anonymously. One sentence, no deep meaning, simplest way you can identify these individuals.
Don't worry about logging in. This is going to be right now. If you can, good. If not, we'll take it later. But if you can log in. We'll get it to the point where you can log. You can get into the kinship, but you don't have to worry about it if you're not able to do so. Pass them this way. If you're finished with them, just hand them over here to me. It's okay. We'll sort that out later.
Okay.
That's just some.
Thank you.
Thank you. David Letterman style.
That's true.
Who's still working? Kyle, you've got...
No essays.
Cool. Justin is writing a masterpiece.
It's so hard in one sentence.
So, Will, are you still online?
Yes.
Okay, I just sent you a call back.
Oh,
all
right. Go ahead. Oh, yes, okay, there. I just see the box.
Thanks, Jess.
So, we're gonna start talking about the movie, Lord of the Rings, that you watched last night. And not the book. And the first thing I want to do is get some... general reactions to it. First of all, just how many of you all had seen it before?
Seen like...
Okay, 100%. Extended version, everybody, or just...
No, just the regular.
Just the regular.
I love Pets Hogan.
Pardon me?
When I saw it, like, when it came out, I wasn't that interested in it. And now I just loved it. I was just entranced, like...
Other reactions? Loved it, entranced.
And Evan had commented on the way in that he enjoyed this homework assignment this weekend.
Did you notice the... Did any of you all have access to the table of contents that showed the number of scenes that were either extended or entirely new in the extended version? It's really awe-inspiring. More than half of them are either extended or entirely new. So unlike a lot of, you know, director's cut versions that just have a little bit... And what they added in, like what did they add in for those of you that can have some kind of impression about the difference between the one they saw in the theaters?
They put a lot of backstory in at the very beginning that helped explain a lot of what was going on.
That's right. Backstory, and all the way through, rich details about character setting, history, background, culture, all the kinds of stuff that make it not just an action movie.
And like Bilbo's trolls.
What?
Bilbo's trolls.
Oh,
were, yeah, and like it wasn't really necessary, but it kind of like, yeah.
And it's going to be so sweet when you get to Bilbo's trolls in Lotro, the game. It's a kind of a great moment. I got chills because I just stumbled across him, and it was early in the game, and nobody had told me that I was going to find the trolls, and then there they were in the middle of this wilderness. Other reactions, just reactions to the game. Excuse me, to the movie, not the game. We're gonna talk in depth about the early chapters of the movie, and just start using these early chapters of the movie to talk about how you criticize a film. Have any of you all ever taken film classes and done criticism on films? Treated them as anything other than just fun? Well, they are fun, but they are also things we can really analyze. And so we're going to get some basic terms of film theory under our belt so that we all have an understanding of the terms. And one of the things about film criticism, I think, that's so fascinating is that everybody in this room, I suspect, is an accomplished interpreter of films without knowing it. That you're deeply literate in the language, the grammar, the techniques of films without any kind of vocabulary for actually explaining why something another has this effect or that effect on you. And so this will come in, I think it comes in very useful in a lot of your college. Uh-oh, listen to Jay. Thank you, Ed Lott. Great. A new way to get people's attention. So perhaps we should just watch a little bit of the... I do not want to shut down the scene. Let's watch a little of the very beginning of the movie up on that screen. And I'll stop it frequently, so prepare to be frustrated if you just really would like to sit, kick back, and watch the movie. So let's see here.
It began with the forging of the great rings. Three were given to the elves, immortal, wisest, and fairest of all beings. Seven to the dwarf lords, great miners and craftsmen of the mountain halls. And nine rings were gifted to the race of men who, above all else, desire power. For within these rings was bound the strength and will to govern each race. But they were all of them deceived, for another ring was made. In the land of Mordor, in the fires of Mount Doom, the Dark Lord Sauron forged in secret a master ring to control all others. And into this ring he poured his cruelty, his malice, and his will to dominate all life. One ring to rule them all.
Just describe what you've seen. What have you seen? Yeah.
It's just like an introduction to the story. Just and how background information.
Background information, exposition is the term you'd probably use. Exposition. What else? Yep. It definitely identifies the antagonist. That's well said. What about the focus on that ring? Think about the ring. Is it?
It introduces a symbolic element.
Exactly. You've seen a symbol. You've seen the first seeding of the first seeding of what's going to grow into one of the most provocative symbols, and. You'll watch the way over the course of the movie that symbol acquires richness of meaning and resonance, so that it basically begins to acquire multiple meanings. What else have you seen? Anything else that you've seen, just visually?
That sort of gives you an idea of the breadth of races that you're going to see. It points out, it shows you elves and dwarves and humans, and gives you an idea that they're all sort
groups.
Of the same.
Or breadth. That's good. Breadth of races. Write the word groups up there too, please.
It gives you an idea of Sauron's evil. Mountain Doom and just the volcanic, just the magma flowing and it's kind of erupting.
And that's not exactly the same as antagonist either. because, you know, you can have an antagonist without it being a, you know, symbol of evil. So another thing is a kind of thematic element you can already, this is not hard to guess, but a thematic element of good versus evil is really, but anything else you saw? What were the other visual images that were put before you?
Fire. It's like a war brewing.
Fire, war brewing up. Anything else?
When was the first time you see a map?
Map is so important. So you get a map of a world, and so the filmmaker thought it was important to give you awareness of a world and a space and a geography in some different place. Before what? Before what's not there that you'd expect at the beginning of a movie? Hard question. A character. A character that you've got an antagonist, but you don't have a protagonist. Watch and tell me when you first see a protagonist. Anything else significant about this introduction, this expository section?
Knowing about the movie, you know that Frodo would be the protagonist, and you don't see Frodo for a while until he's in the forest.
Okay. Okay, we'll talk about that. I don't want to go there yet. We will talk about that. One other obvious but crucial and unusual filmic feature that hasn't been mentioned. It's so obvious that I'm going to just say it out loud. It's a voiceover. A voiceover. And, you know, voiceovers are very special. I bet one out of only, say, 10 movies have any part with a voiceover in it. So it's, you know, it's a recognized and ordinary cinematic technique, but a filmmaker uses it with great awareness that it's going to create an effect. Let's move on.
One by one, the three lands of Middle-earth fell to the power of the ring. But there were some who resisted. A last alliance of men and elves against the armies of Mordor.
Let's see if I can move forward. So that, sadly, you know, many people think this is the best part of the movie, this kind of scene. And, of course, there's many good elements here, including a lot of a scene there that you will see repeated with variation how many times during the this volume of the movie alone,
three or four,
and I don't actually have a count of the number, but three or four times. And so, you know, it is a significant scene that I'm back for.
To destroy evil forever, but the hearts of men are easily corrupted, and the Ring of Power has a will of its own.
Still fighting. Sorry. I want to get on to the next chapter, basically. And it doesn't look like this has a chapter forward easily.
We're lost. History became legend. Legend became myth. And for 2,500 years, the ring passed out of all knowledge. Until, when chance came, it ensnared a new bearer.
New protagonist.
What?
New protagonist, huh?
Not yet.
No. Right, I know.
Like, you don't get to see him.
For the moment.
And still it's focused on the ring, as if the ring were a character here.
The ring came to the creature Gollum, who took it deep into the tunnels of the Misty Mountains. And there, it consumed him.
still can't get to the next chapter, can I? My next class period, we're going to have to figure out chapter controls.
Get this one on.
Okay, and so we missed the exact transition I wanted.
You looking for Bilbo picking up the ring?
Just the frame, really, prior to the transition. So you can see what the transition is, isn't it? It's from map. It's sort of map out, map in. Which is showing you lots of, okay. So there you are. Mountain to a mountain representation of the mountain.
Day of September.
And a voice.
Year 1400.
What's the difference in voices?
No, it's harsh.
What?
Before it was like scary, kind of like
epic.
Epic, yeah.
When I would see something homely, like there.
Epic to homely. English. That's a good English. Description. That's great. Yeah, more.
The music changes as well.
The music changes as well, which is significant.
Like shine, right?
And so you get Wagner called this a motif, a leitmotif. What's those music people here? Tell me about leitmotifs.
It's just used together or to represent a certain area. So like what we've got is like the Shire motif going on there.
Exactly. Again, one of the most common cinematic tricks there is to give a leitmotif to a place. But important to recognize, especially in this trilogy, I think. More on the voice. Listen to the voice.
Thanks, Hobbiton, Westfarthing, the Shire, Middle Earth. The third age of this world.
What you're saying.
The theme song.
The theme song, yeah. More now, you haven't gotten to
there and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins.
Now, what's the difference between the voiceover and the first voiceover and this voiceover?
See the person that it's supposed to represent.
Exactly. That you've got a character that the voice is identified with, and that. There's a very significant difference here. Suddenly, you're going, oh, maybe this is our main character. Maybe this is his story. But what's he doing? He's telling you as he writes, so he's chronicling. He's chronicling. So you pretty well grasp, without, you know, articulating any of this, you pretty well grasp already that he's clearly, if he's going to be the main character of this story, it's going to be a flashback because he's writing it retrospectively. Mm-hmm. So you know that there's a kind of distance between this voice and the person, the hobbit, from whom it's emanating.
Where to begin?
This is a problem with Tolkien, isn't it? There's so much backstory.
Concerning hobbits.
Notice that transition?
Living and farming in the four farthings of the Shire for many hundreds of years. Quite content to ignore and be ignored by the world of the big folk.
What is this whole scene which I then plan to fast forward over establishing
the hobbits. Being able to identify with the culture allows you to be more with the character himself who's part of that culture.
You're right. Is that the main reason, do you think, for establishing the culture so thoroughly? I mean, we really ought to put the word culture up there Matt, if you don't mind, that it's spending time setting up multiple groups, setting up a huge backstory, and setting up a culture and a place, and what kind of place is it?
Just like to lend reality to this world. It's to make it its own world. It's not just a story now. This is a world that you're getting into.
The other thing I think it's setting up, it's kind of the interaction that all the different people that live in this world are going to have. Like, the elves and the dwarves are complete opposites, and you see that come through later on when they meet for the first discussion about the ring and Rivendell. And by doing all this backstory, you kind of understand where everyone's coming from.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? If you think of that argument that's so much fun around at the Council of Rivendell, you know, it's just one of the great scenes in the whole movie. And you think about it, it's all been prepared for by this focus on multiple cultures and groups.
I was just going to say, I think that leitmotif of each culture kind of helps to separate it, because the music here associated just kind of, you know, it's like
happiness
and kind like of just playful with people.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, two people have said creating a culture in a world makes you identify with the individual more. Someone else said it sets up, makes it realistic. Both of those things are clearly true. Really true. But may not be the primary purpose for the focus on groups and culture by the filmmaker here. That is, if this were a straight realistic film or novel, that would be the primary motive for giving you the world. The world is always there to make you understand the motivations of the character more fully in a traditional realistic world. I'm challenging you to ask yourself if that's really the main thing going on. It certainly is something that's going on. Is it the main thing going on?
I think it's important that the hobbits and their whole culture is set apart. Like, first of all, by the mood of the motif, uh-huh. the leitmotif, and also because it's they're the only ones that are able to not be consumed completely by the ring, I think. And that's one of the reasons they're not introduced in the beginning and not given a ring in the very intro. So they're right here, and they're just setting the whole race of hobbits completely apart.
Good.
Well, also, people tend to underestimate hobbits because they're about this tall. And, you know, not very bright. Like, well, you know, they're not one of the wise
they
races.
They don't have, like, strong physical, like, dwarves.
Yeah. They're not.
So, like, they're underestimated.
Yeah. So that may be why they weren't given rings also. And it's the person that's going to be underestimated that you want to get past all the little...
Well, they're basically introduced as just backwards people, so like, there's no way that the Dark Lord can like pay any attention to them.
Really, no reason why he should.
I think maybe like as far as when he's writing, basically the Hobbit right there, maybe it's just rewarding Jackson's just rewarding the followers of the books as well as kind of just giving them something to look at right there. Because there's fans who have obviously read the books way before the movies, and just kind of come around like a little gift.
You know, that is clearly true. Maybe not the main motive, but certainly a subsidiary motive. And it is one of the pleasures. If you're a fan of the book, you know, you want to register each little thing and go, oh, yeah, that's so clearly a subsidiary pleasure.
You look so happy right now.
Well,
he said it's a pleasure.
It is a pleasure, and I love literature. So, you know, I get excited about these things here. Now, grand experiment. I'm going to try and press this button. Do you think this button is going to go to the end of the deep? Well, come
on. Just do it.
Come on, Leroy Jenkins.
Go to the end of the DVD or the end of the chapter?
See, it's not Leroy Jenkins yet.
Okay, Leroy. It did. It went to the end of the chapter. Superb. Okay, now I'm going to go back a little bit. Because I want... Each transition between these chapters, I think, is very interesting. So there we're back to our narrator. We come out of all that...
Dicklebats, where is that boy?
Now, how did they affect that transition?
Talk. Frodo seemed like a curious, adventurous child. Exactly. The other hobbits who want to stay in Hobbit.
I mean, it's the simplest technique you can think of. Where is that boy camera being? Can't be done in a novel, though. Cannot be done in the novel. Where is that boy Bilbo reflects? Next paragraph. The boy in question, Frodo Baggins, was... No, it's not the same. So you see, cinema has a language of its own that, you know, second hand to you, but it's there. And what do they call it when they cut from one scene to the other? They call it cutting from one scene to the other. Or sometimes they call it what else? Transition? Montage? Do you know the word montage?
Yeah. A montage is a group of pictures.
What?
Like a montage.
There's two meanings to the word montage. One is just juxtaposition of two scenes. Usually more startling than that. So they usually only use it that way, montage.
Mountain Dew.
That's right. They say, and usually it's a juxtaposition. If they use montage just to mean a juxtaposition of two scenes, they use it to mean one, a surprising juxtaposition. If they use it to mean just flash from scene, you know, often they'll do a montage for time passing, and, you know, you'll have 10 pictures of the young lovers frolicking through the park, and you know that they've gone from their first kiss to proposal and marriage. That's the more usual use of the word montage. But so there's a simple transition there. Okay. So, are there signals this is your main character?
Not yet.
Perhaps is a good
the character perhaps, that they've set up that might be the main character that, you know, at first is now looking for this character.
Yeah.
Which kind of might lead us to think that this could be the main character.
Yeah.
It might not lead you to think he's the main character if you have no background in the movie at all. But it tells you that he plays a role at least in this beginning part of the movie.
Right.
He's going to set up the plot.
There you go. And what's he doing?
Reading.
Where
is Trevor?
What does that sing do?
He hears the old man singing.
What?
He hears the old man singing.
Uh-huh.
He recognizes it. Like his eyes are lit up.
Recognition?
That's surprise.
Surprise, recognition, that's not hard. What else?
Well, it also finally shows Frodo's face, and it does like a real close-up, I think I remember. So it gives you a chance to say, okay, here's what we're looking at.
First frontal facial view in the entire movie, other than people that were self-evidently just extras. You know, it's a long way to wait before you see the face of a character. Well, that's probably not true. You had the king dead or lopping off the finger, and but of a person that's clearly not part of the exposition, this is the first time you get to see a character's face, and then you're absolutely right. It zooms in for a little bit of a close-up. What do close-ups mean? What do close-ups mean in the language of cinema, generally, often? Somebody that hadn't talked.
Take a look.
Look at this.
Look at this.
Look
just
at this.
Focus all your attention on what
this is
happening
important.
Right there.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Focus on the facial expression.
It does. And it also often means going inside the character's mind. Usually when very often, when a close-up is on a person's face, and it's on the face to begin with, and then goes all the way into the face, it's that character is thinking about something. And of course, movies can't tell you what they're thinking about. So what is the next scene going to tell you what he's thinking about, or in this case, recognizing? Yeah, it's going to be who he sees. It's going to be Gandalf. And so what you've got here is what's called, and this is probably the most crucial term we'll come to today because it's one you maybe don't know of, everything else is obvious, is shot reverse shot. Shot slash reverse shot. Have you ever heard of that term?
Yeah.
shot is the shot of a person's face. The reverse shot is the shot of what that person is seeing. And that is the only way cinema can establish point of view. I'm being, you know, I bet there's other ways. I'm not, I'm exaggerating. But that's how cinema establishes point of view. Who is doing the seeing of something? Well, the simplest way to do it is shot reverse shot. And it is, again, just a totally instinctive language of the film that you recognize without even knowing you're recognizing it. And so it's going to turn around, and there it is. And that's not a really striking shot reverse shot. And it's important that it's not a striking shot reverse shot for several reasons that we'll come to in a minute. In fact, for one thing, he wasn't seeing it. It told you what he was hearing, not what he was saying.
You're late.
A wizard is never late with his baggage. Nor is he earning. He arrives precisely when he means to.
I say that to my children all the time.
It's wonderful to see you, Gandalf.
How do they do that? How do they make that actor so small?
I think I'm sure I could do most of this. So how is there, rascal? I hear it's going to be a party of special magnificence.
You know Bilbo, he's got the whole place in an uproar.
Well, that should please him.
Half the Shire's been invited. The rest of them is setting up anyway.
What kind of landscape is that? The Shire, generally, and that
rural
green hills.
It's always bright in like
summertime
or spring.
Yeah.
Nice weather usually.
Good point. Use of weather, sunshine.
The clouds are, if there are any, they're like beautiful.
So there's a literary term for the kind of setting that is being created here that is pastoral, ideal, certainly ideal. The Shire is idealized. So this is a pastoral setting. And pastoral settings are almost always used to create restful, out of the action places. Pastoral almost by definition means no action. When action enters pastoral, it disrupts it, it destroys it. And you know, of course, that's one of the big threats of Mount Doom versus this pastoral setting. But here you've got this ideal. In classical times, the most famous pastoral setting was, can anyone read my mind?
Elysian Fields.
What?
Elysian
Fields, of course, was after death. So, you know, that is kind of a heaven as well as, and the heaven is pastoral, so you're not wrong.
But it's cheating.
But it's, you know, prefer to have a good long period before you get there. Arcadia, was the chief name, and it was the golden land, and the Shire is being set up that way as well. Now I'm going to jump to the next scene, but you recall what a nice pastoral setting and ideal, and it associates it, of course, with children, simple virtues, homely life, plain folk. So all these virtues.
And what of our very old friends?
Watch the faces.
Bilbo Baggins.
Dear Gandalf.
Good to see you. I'm 111 years old.
Have we had an exchange of shot, reverse shot? Not exactly. I don't want to lure you into a false answer. that's not exactly shot reverse shot. What's being done there rather than, if shot reverse shot sets up a point of view, the point of view it sets up is generally the point of view that governs the perspective of the scene to come or the entire film. So if you use shot reverse shot, you're giving implicit narrative control to the character that you've done it with. And obviously, Peter Jackson doesn't want to do that there. Doesn't want you to see this scene from Gandalf's perspective or from Bilbo's perspective, does it? So this kind of shot establishes what kind of exchange? Dialogue, conversational, given equal weight to both characters. And watch through the whole scene. We probably won't watch the whole scene, but think your way through the whole scene about the equal weight to the perspective of each character.
Come on, come in! Welcome, welcome. Tea? Or maybe something a little stronger. I've got a few bottles of the old Wynyard left. 1296. Very good year. Almost as old as I am. It was lent out by my father. What say the open one, eh?
Just tea, thank you.
I can make you some eggs if you love. Come.
Just you.
Oh, right.
Same mask.
Yes, all a horrible.
No, not at all.
I'm not at home.
Sack Bill Baggins is a great
guy. Isn't it Sack Bill Baggins?
Yeah.
I know you're in there. They're out of the house. They've never forgiven me for living this long. I've got to get away from these confounded relatives hanging on the bevel. They never give me a moment's peace. I want to see mountains again. Mountains, Gandalf. And then find somewhere quiet where I can finish my book. Okay.
So you mean to go through with your plan, then?
Yes, yes. It's all in hand. All the arrangements are made. Oh, thank you.
Frodo suspects something.
Of course he does. He's a Baggins, not some blockheaded brace girl from Hardbottle.
You will tell him, won't you?
We're going to have to move on.
Yes, yes.
Very fun.
I guess we better, sadly, go to the next scene that... You want to show them the party, Matt?
You ready?
Sure. Why don't you?
Where are we? I just want to ask one question. Anyone know where we're at right now in the Shire? I have a map of the Shire up here. I saw a little laser pointer.
The hill.
Stand up and show me. Stand up and see if you can make sure everybody knows where you're at. It's kind of a dead giveaway. We're close. That's Hobbiton. A little wee bit.
The red dot.
We north of that.
Yeah.
Go north of the Hobbit. Up is always north of the maps. So go from Hobbiton, go straight up. There we go.
That red triangle
indicates you on the map. That's your spatial representation inside of a game. Not everyone's played these games, so let's start with the basics. That map, see the red dot right there? Underneath the hill, north of Hobbiton, right there. That's where this is happening, the scene in the film, and this is where Professor Clayton and I are right now. And there is our good professor in plain view.
Looks just like...
looks just like him, doesn't it? It's like a junior version.
Where's the glasses?
Oh, that is so true. The glasses.
And part of the way you can express yourself inside of the game is through something called emotes. You can actually add to the narrative by, as Cheery just did, he bowed deeply, I waved. And of course, what I like to do to him usually is laugh at him. But this is the area right here. The house they're fighting at, where do you suppose that house is?
Back in.
Yep. Would you like to go up there, Professor?
Why not?
Get a sense of this space where the Sackville Bagginses are assailing. So we've gone down from where that cake is, where the fireworks display. Goodness, who's that?
Hey, Doc, you're so fast for your long legs.
Did you want me outside or inside?
No, I just came in to join you.
So now we've entered the same space that Gandalf and Bilbo were occupying.
Where's the chandelier?
That's an interesting question, but do you think that they use the book or the movie? No. I change clothes.
You're more of a relaxed. I'm always a 10-8 ready to roll. Notice in the upper right-hand corner there is a map, a spatial representation of your overall area that you've discovered here. So this will be for this little instance what you are, so this will help you guide yourself through here, and this is a 3D version in this space. There is Cheery wandering about. Go ahead and let me invite you real quick. So you can also see, you can track your mates as you do fellowships, and in Lord of the Rings, the game, it's called a fellowship. So,
not a group.
Uh-oh. He's got his voice on.
Actually, I've never used this computer before, so I didn't know I had a voice pickup.
Native microphone. But notice the other green dot there next to me. I'm the red dot, and your mates are the green dots. That's some of the little mechanics. You can see there's Cheery moving about. How far he is from you, 8 meters. So there's a spatial orientation about the game. If you play Dungeons & Dragons or other MMOs, or something, you'll be familiar with this, but for those of you who haven't, it's very important basics for you to keep in mind so that you're more fluid, and we'll work with you separately outside of class as well.
Right.
Well,
I just wondered who that dude was right there.
We need to find out about that.
We do need to find out.
That's right. Who are some of these characters? There's an amazing level of detail, not only from the book, but from peripheral books like the Silmarillion and others. So if you know the lore, you will find lots of just little touches that they don't make a big deal of. They're just there as part of the environment. I wanted to have time to get to the next chapter. I'm going to skip the whole party scene and then go here to Bilbo going up to his house and see if we can get a little of this exchange between Gandalf and Bilbo. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna see if I can get into the middle of this.
Why didn't the writers come for Bilbo ever?
Pardon me?
Why didn't the writers ever come for Bilbo over the last however many years?
They didn't have the information.
Oh, the writers. I thought you were saying the writers.
No, the writers.
You know, you see, Lee is giving the correct answer.
Yeah.
Can anyone elaborate on that?
They captured Gollum.
Captures Gollum,
oh, right,
in the castle when they're...
But, for example, they show you when Frodo puts on the ring, he goes into that alternate world where they can feel him, like they know exactly where he is, and the eye was always immediately attracted to that spot.
Right, so the eye wasn't back yet.
Yeah, Sauron's just gaining power over the last few years.
And you notice where Harry Potter author got the idea of Horcruxes. You know, they said, well, he wasn't killed, his spirit's in the ring. And as long as the ring's there, he's slowly, you know, coming back into bodily form. That's that Harry Potter stuff.
He's still technically not killed after the ring is truly.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
He's just like a very, very weak spirit.
Without the ring?
Yeah. Like, once the ring's destroyed, he's not like fully unmade. He's just so weak that he can't do anything.
How are we going to get rid of him?
Ghostbusters.
There's our
Bill
answer.
Murray.
Because it talks about that in the books.
Isn't that all done?
Leave the ring behind, no? Is that so hard?
Well, no. And yes.
We only have 3 more minutes, and so I can't show you the things I wanted to show you. Who do you think the protagonist of this movie is?
We have 15 minutes. Only 2:06.
Oh, it's not 2:10.
That's 1:25.
We got 2:25.
Oh,
but wait, there's more.
Wait, there's
this is like getting the bonus XP.
Exactly. Bonus play.
Now it comes to it. I don't feel like parting with it. It's mine. I found it. It came to me.
There's no need to get angry.
What if I'm angry? It's your fault. It's mine. My precious.
Precious. It's been called that before, but not by you.
This isn't yours, but I knew in my own face.
I think you've had that ring quite long enough.
You want it for yourself?
Bilbo Baggins! Do not take me for some conjurer of cheap tricks. I am not trying to rob you. I'm trying to help you. All your long years, we've been friends. Trust me, as you once did. Let it go.
Just to underline the difference between shot, reverse shot, and what's going on here, you're looking at his face over the reverse shot of the person he's in conversation with, watching him talk. That's a basic structuring in television. In fact, it was a great breakthrough for drama in television when they understood that this kind of shot is what they needed to do because the little screen was more appropriately sized for this kind of interaction than the great panoramas of movies. So television at first didn't understand and tried to use strictly the language of cinema, you know, on the little screen, and they kept wondering why the drama shows weren't working on television. So this kind of shot, which you're very used to, is not establishing a perspective, it's establishing a scene. The whole scene is given equal importance.
You're right, Gandalf. The ring must go to Frodo. It's late. The road is long. Yes, it is time.
Bilbo. The ring is still in your pocket.
Yes.
Him right in the beginning. It's a particular kind of story that keeps you conscious of the end at all times. And it's the not realistic. Realism, in fact, wants you not to think, oh, there's going to be a clear destination to this story. There is going to be an end. Because realism wants you to think you're immersed in the middle of life. It wants you to think, oh, I'm not in an artificial story that has a beginning, middle, and end, a story that's going to circle back to itself or that is going to take you someplace that you can almost see in advance. That's what realism wants you to go, oh, this is just like ordinary life, and who knows what's going to happen next, even though realistic novels actually do have ends. But here, this is a different kind of story. It's a story that we're going to talk about a lot more in this class, a genre. What do you think the genre is? Does anyone have a word for the genre of this kind of story?
Fantasy,
definitely. So say genre, because we're going to give a lot of, and then, adventure. Thank you, sir. Fantasy, definitely.
Fantasy adventure.
Adventure, definitely.
Epic.
Excellent. There are definitely epic elements. What is the difference between epic
and what?
And anything else?
And not epic?
And not epic, yeah.
Is epic so broad in life?
You mean in the sense of like an epic story as defined by Aristotle?
And that's exactly what I mean, in fact.
you'll have a hero that has certain qualities around that brings an end to himself. I don't know if that applies to this movie. That's just one of the traits.
And so this movie is not strictly an epic, but it sure has epic elements. And your comment about just broad, you know, the Hollywood, the advertising, marketing ploy, the epic sweep of so-and-so is actually responding to something in the genre of epic, which is that it has a scope of breadth. Epics, what are epics usually about?
Tragic hero.
That's tragedy. That's about a tragic hero.
History.
What?
History.
History. Right. Yes. History. History often of a nation, or of a people, or of a world, or of a culture. Notice all the things we said at the very beginning of that. You know, four sheets up, or three sheets up. On our notes, we said groups, races, cultures, getting all that focus. Epic is a genre that has a character like, you know, Achilles or like Odysseus, or that both is an individual story, but it's a story that embodies a whole nation or culture's fate. What's the scene in this movie much later that really brings home to you that it's about fates of races. Pardon me? In this movie. Speak up, Sam.
When they're all sitting, all the races are together, like discussing what to do.
That's certainly a big one.
How about when he looks into the cup and sees the what could be the future if he fails?
Yeah, he sees the failure of his race, exactly.
I was thinking about whenever he was just like, whatever they first met with Galadriel.
Yep.
And she was telling them how close they were to failing. That's what kind of got me on that.
That's a key point. And notice how many of them that are. Somebody hits
them. I was going to say, when they go down into Moria and see them, the entire dwarven settlements are wiped out.
That's certainly a vivid image. What about when Elrond and Gandalf are talking together, and Elrond has that great line, the age of elves are over. They're leaving the land. Now come, you know, what race is going to step forward? And Gandalf says, we're going to have to depend on men. And Elrond goes, man, like that. Do you remember that scene?
Yeah.
So those are epic elements to this movie. More on the genre. We got fantasy, adventure, epic.
Immersive.
What?
Immersive. Is that like specific?
I think you mean more by that than I understand yet.
Like just the fact that it can take it like takes you into another world that is like fictional.
It is a hard word. It is, you know, what kind of world, fiction, I guess fiction is as close as we have because fiction immerses you in some elsewhere. And fantasy does too, so maybe that's just a quality of fantasy fiction. Romance is the...
Let's say you could put in tons of subplots and subgenres in there, and you can go into certain characters and see they have their own genre sort of revolving around them. And I think with the romance one, you're going with Aragorn and...
Aragorn and Arwen,
right.
Which isn't in the book. And what...
But she needed a part.
They needed something for their Tyler to do. Exactly. Those four... genres, more than any other genres, have ends that are predictable in their beginnings. Odysseus is going to get home. Achilles is going to get mad. And so all of the genres that we've identified as being part of the Lord of the Rings cycle are genres that want you to know you're in the kind of story that is going to care more about the symmetry of the story than the reality of the people or the reality of everyday life. Though it's going to capture that too. I'm not saying that it doesn't have that. Let's see if we still have time for a little more of our film.
Bye, Gandalf.
Goodbye, Gandalf.
Goodbye, dear Bilbo.
Watch this thing. I submit that's the first true shot reverse shot we've had in the movie. We've seen Gandalf looking, then we've seen what he's looking at. And more surprisingly, we've seen the ring looking at Gandalf. The ring is looking at Gandalf. Does that make the ring a character in this movie?
The ring is a character.
You think so?
Well, it abandoned Gollum. They betrayed Isildur.
They give it, it wants to be found.
They give it a personification that it is doing its own actions.
And so, you kind of get the feeling through the movie and through the book more that ring does have some kind of sentience to it. Like,
it interacts with other characters.
Yes.
And it's calling the Nazgul. I mean,
it can actually change its size too. Like when he first takes the rings, looking at the flames on it, it shrinks right in front of him.
And the voice that he has on all the worlds.
Not the first time, the second time.
Make a good case for it.
It's not doing.
Make a good case for it. So who's the protagonist of this movie? So more to the point, first just tell me who the protagonist is.
Whoever has to deal with the ring.
Interesting. That's an interesting answer.
I couldn't hear the answer. What was the answer?
It's going to be whoever has to deal with the ring.
Whoever has to deal with the ring.
Other answers?
The protagonist.
Multiple protagonists.
But if you
who are they?
As there are with any good story, there's always.
Do you think that's true? Do you think every good story has multiple
protagonists?
Okay,
a little bit exaggerated, but I mean.
No. This little. I was posing it as a mock debate, but it's a crucial
point. Obviously, that's
point.
An overgeneralized statement, but that it's very possible to have multiple characters acting for one goal. For example, multiple protagonists acting for good.
Read a lot of novels structured that way?
A lot, sure. A lot.
Depends
how you define that.
I'm trying to think of a novel structured that way. A novel. Well, of course, Lord of the Rings by J.R.R. Tolkien.
Never read that.
Maybe War and Peace. We're much more used to it in movies. You know, war movies with one of every type character. The latest fad out in Hollywood latest over the last 5 years are kind of ensemble movies where there's no main storyline. I suggest that you're much more familiar with it, and the reason you say there's a lot of them is that it's much more characteristic of movies than of novels. That you know, novels are usually about the struggles of an individual against society. Think of autobiographies. They're one person's story. And the novel, because it has the great ability to go inside characters and explore their hopes and dreams, their thoughts and fears, novels are very often about an individual's fighting against a larger world and with an individual protagonist. So much so that Thackeray, when he wrote Vanity Fair and tried to have a multi-plot novel, subtitled it A Novel Without a Hero, as though that was impossible, as though that contradicted the job of a novel. So I think, you know, you're really right. You want to do that today? You
just want to plant the seed.
I think you should plant away then, because the garden's ripe.
Sometimes the time frame, perhaps not, this is open for debate, impacts what an author draws into their stories. I'm going to put these dates up there for you. I'm not going to tell you the significance of the dates. And I'll leave it to you to make that determination why this may or may not be germane to this particular author and his works.
You could find that out. You don't need to cut it down, though, because it will be posted to the course.
Supplemental
materials on the website.
However, so copying it down does reinforce it.
True. You certainly have permission to copy it down. Yeah, those are key dates. Figure out why for next class period, because we will talk about those dates. One answer to say, I think we've had several good answers already to who the protagonist is. Another answer is the Fellowship. Which you know, the title of the movie is a key to that. It is the Fellowship that is the main character, no individual. I went all the way through this movie looking for a true shot reverse shot that established a character's perspective that then dominated the remainder of the scene, and could not find one. This is the closest I could find in this movie. In the second one, you get Gollum. Has all these reverse shots, and Gollum does dominate So the second part of this, the second in the series, moves away from it. But there, I don't think there is a main character in this movie. So we'll stop there since it really is now to the end of class period.
Check your Facebook. You have two YouTube activities to look at. I posted out there for our discussion on Thursday. You Apple guys can stay with me for a minute. I'll give you the glorious news on your MacBooks.
And anybody that's not in the kinship and can get on right now and wants to take a moment to do it.
Will you be here for like the next 15 minutes? Because
I'm
still downloading the game.
I usually look at it until go back and do it on my desktop real quick. Earliest. So Jay may or may not be on earlier than that. So usually we have some overlapping.
Is there a way I can like send a tell, send message?
Yep, send a tell or send an email when you get
the How do you do it? What's the command?
So since I'm out of the introductory level.
Is it slash tell name?
Slash T or is it tell? Oh.
Class is over.
Yes.
Like I said, mine's still not working. Like it won't open. It's all telling right. me connection failed, couldn't initialize crypto IPL.
You know, you really started
it's my alarm.
Today, you're not going to be able to do that many more questions, but I'm not. I know you can. I think that actually the game.
Apple guys, come here.
Right through
my mind. What is that? What were we talking about
when you walked in? When I walked in, you guys.
We just started.
We talked about the introduction that was the last thing we said about the introduction.
What Apple said to do.
And we talked about, let's see if I can show you here. Let's see here. One title.
Okay. So you guys were on the second page. Yeah, that's where you guys
so,
where came in.
So we talked about how the introduction set some of these things up. Particularly, you know, this emphasis on map of the world. You know, the map so that a world and a space. We talked about the groups.
Whatever or a high 3.5, whatever it is.
Before we. So we got to there. You know, I imagine that the kinds of things we said later in the discussion, we're just building on the stuff we already said.
Slash.
Yeah, I got that. And I was making the point.
His name, which.
I did a it's going to serve you well for your academic career because you're going to
It brings up a black screen.
Pay the price now, you
and it says that. It has
at some point, you're going to need to run Windows only programs on your But if you follow the directions on boot camp, you get the XP, just the link to the device, let's say it's NTFS.
And
it's just
bump
one of them.
Just
any of
those. Microsoft. That's what I was looking for. .NET framework. It's called 3.5.
Show me that.
You can Windows install. Get that. Then you go to Lodra.
Like I can log in and everything. It looks like it's doing it. Uh-huh. And where it would normally be loaded your game.
It
just brings up that black screen.
You just have to restart it. Like it does all this. Backup critical data you have. To an external drive,
you're not into
something like Mosey or MobileMe, whatever the Mac version is.
I've never seen, you know, the trial version doesn't have all the graphics.
We've got three other laptops available with their Windows that you can check out if you want to. So that you don't have to go through this process.
And it says that I've visited that world before.
You end up making Windows applications basically. Perhaps, I'm not sure what your relative
is.
And it goes
so if boot camp works, I want to know, I did it, I tested it, Lord of the Rings works, but again, it's
not. We even uninstalled everything. I got every file off the computer, re-downloaded and reinstalled it. It's the same thing.
We started, it was end up here working in class beforehand, testified it does it, it works.
But yeah, I had it up running. I'm playing the.
It said something about maybe instead of doing wireless, to
have a guy in the class last semester.
And maybe try that. But I haven't had hardline access.
The scariest part of the journey.
You want to try that now with the hardlines?
Yes. I have to figure out what else I need to download.
I think what you need to download.
I just haven't been able to get on
this. I'm sure the first step is Microsoft.net framework.
Yeah, I think that's the issue is I tried to download.
Though, of course, I'm on it.
I had to say I had to stop.
Get a little closer. This is
what it does now is when I click on the download.
Uninstall it.
What's your name?
But trust me, I didn't say anything you did.
I've never played.
You guys have seen what I've been telling you about. Uninstall the file. .NET Framework 3.
I've never really played an online game. I'm just wondering what things I need to know. I'm slowly figuring some of it out.
You've got your MacBook Pro just like this, right? You're totally
figuring it out is part of the journey.
Stricter grade supervision.
And so I wouldn't worry about it. And you're certainly not going to be...
You just type in Microsoft.net framework.
Microsoft site no download from anywhere else but Microsoft. Gonna be, kind of thing
I understand the whole concept of the game. Like, I'm doing fine in the game, but it's the littler things like kinship and things like that.
That's right. You know, once you're in the kinship, are you in, Kyle?
Yes, I'm in.
What's your name? Doyle?
Yeah.
Equals Kyle. Okay. Once you're in the game, who is Corello?
That'd be me.
Okay. And are you Jim?
Yes, I am.
Jim, okay. Thank you. Once you're in the kinship, let me show you how to talk to the kinship. You see this little chat bubble? It's usually going to be... It's going to come up looking... Oh, excuse me. It's going to come... I'm going to have to go get a mouse for this. It drives me crazy to be...
Yeah, I can't stand those things.
Professor Klein.
Yes?
Which one of these names are you logged into right now?
I'm in Cherrible.
Okay.
Matt's on Keradin, I believe.
Okay. I'll get back to my dorm and get on my desktop to send you a message real quick.
Come on. There we go. Okay. So mine's being balky.
What?
My computer's being balky just to prove to you that it's not only your computer that can be balky.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Mine freezes a lot, too.
Mine rarely freezes
on... Well, I mean, with this game.
It rarely freezes on... what am I trying to say? On hard connections. It's wireless. That it, okay. So it's going to look like that when you log in.
Right.
And once you're a member of the kinship, you can press slash K and space, and it changes that channel to kinship. And so everything you say is goes not to the person you're with in the room, but to the kinship.
Okay.
And then you can go slash F. And you see, I'm in a fellowship with Keradin, and everything I said would go not to the kinship, not to the room, but to that pair.
Okay.
And then, if you have headphones, the two of you can speak to each other over your headphones as well.
Okay.
And have you figured out what quests are?
I've played a good bit.
So you have played?
Yeah, I'm like level 11.
Okay, so you've figured out what quests are.
Yeah, I figured out the basics. It's just a little... I mean, the difference is from other RPGs that I'm... Like, I've done a lot of offline gaming. Just and not so, really any online.
So there's only four members of our kinship online right now. But you can see that it's got dozens, more than 100 members.
Now, are these people that have taken this class in the past, or are they just random people?
Random people. Not one of them have taken the class.
They're no longer random to us, though.
Right. They're good friends. Many of them are good friends.
Actually, I don't know. interested in it. So
you do or you don't?
I do.
Okay.
You
can get very close to your kinship.
Well, I met someone through Final Fantasy XI. She lives in Canada.
Wow. Oh, you've met her.
You know,
her
we talked a lot. And when I went to France, I sent her postcards and stuff. So
cool. That is cool. So you figured out things like your character panel.
Right. Yeah. I'm slowly getting all that.
Right. And you know, I think
exactly
I just change clothes.
Okay, so that's what that is.
Uh huh.
So you can have two sets. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
not until you're level 20.
Okay.
And right. When you're level 20, you can have two sets. But the secret to this set is it doesn't give you any virtues whatsoever. You get all the strengths and virtues of whatever you're wearing on that set.
Right.
But in other words, you can't put some particularly strong piece in here thinking you'll get it because
right.
You won't.
You can't
what is the purpose of having that then?
Costumes only. So that you can have three.